And a good Monday morning to you, and welcome into the DDC here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick in Denver, Derek Mason, Elijah Campbell, manning the board at the Hillside Medical Game Studio. Predators lose their final regular season game on Friday. Their matchup will be Colorado. Vanderbilt lost their series. The Vols won their series. The Grizzlies eliminated Minnesota. The Grizzlies lost game one by a point. Nashville SC played to a draw. And the Titans had a draft. Whew. Did I leave anything out?
Nah, not really.
Okay, we'll see you guys tomorrow. Thank you for listening. Be safe. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 10.
Oh, man. I'm sitting here laughing.
Why are you snickering?
At Elijah. Because when you were introducing everyone and you introduced me, I wanted to say, what's up? What's up? But the mic wasn't on. And he kept pointing at me like, okay, you're on now. And I was like, what's up? And I couldn't
hear. Might help if I turned his mic on.
So you had a false start right out of the gate.
Three times. Not three once. Times. Not twice, but three times.
All right. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick in Denver, Fred Miller, and Elijah Campbell on today's show.
I don't know if Elijah knows the reference.
False start, Fred. Yeah. I think it was three times. That's why.
Yeah. But I don't, was Elijah, he might have been one or two, somewhere around there.
If it was before 1995, was I wasn't alive to see it.
Well, it was after 95.
It was so after 95.
He was what? He had to be 10.
It was 99.
99? Okay.
Yeah, it was the first
was it 99
year.
Or 2000?
It was 2000. Year. No, it was okay. 2000. No, it was no you're right. Season. It was 99 season. And then once he came
and
to
he
us
had
in
five.
2000,
he
the name stuck with him.
He had five in that game?
He had five.
Oh,
wow.
My gosh.
So
it was a great game.
He was deemed false star Fred.
That's legendary stuff right there.
Yeah.
And then
but he wasn't on the Titans. Remember, he was on
no,
he was on the Rams.
Yeah, but then he came to the Titans.
He came to the Titans.
He was good with us.
Very
he had
good.
A few, but he was I think he left the name false star Fred back in back in St. Louis.
Yeah. Yeah. So we got a lot of things to get into. Obviously, we'll talk about the draft with TD coming up at 11 o'clock. We'll talk to our man Smoky Mountain Rain, a.k.a. Vince Ferrara, at noon. By the way, they had a pitcher throw 105.5.
Woo!
Fastest, I think, pitch ever recorded in college baseball history. I think that's right.
Good Lord.
105.5. I believe it was the second fastest throw ever in the history of baseball. I think Chapman holds the record.
Gosh. What did that kid take? We used to eat some hot peppers before the game?
I don't know. But I'll take whatever.
Eat some spinach? Did he Popeye it up?
Feed it to my 10-year-olds. See if we can hit that. And then things will be good.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to hit 105. I'll tell you what, about 75, we win a whole lot more games. I'll tell
hey,
you
listen,
that.
If your kids are throwing 75, I feel for the catcher.
That's a really good point. Probably couldn't get away with that.
Exactly. Yeah. Catcher has a double mitt.
We'll talk with Drake at double mitt. Drake Hills at 1 o'clock to go over the yesterday that was first ever match at Geodis Park. Sellout crowd. Mm-hmm. Got home and got to watch the second half. So translated well on television. Mm-hmm. So we'll get into all of those particulars with Drake. And like I said, all the goals were scored in the second half. Thought maybe and we can ask Drake if he thought there should have been maybe a little hand action by Philadelphia twice. Should have been called the second time. It was called the first time for a penalty shot. It wasn't called the second time. I don't know. A little controversy. Just saying. But Friday, you were in Arizona. I've got to be honest, like everybody.
Mm-hmm.
When it was 4-0, it was like, wow, Arizona has their golf clubs in the trunk, and they already have their suitcases packed for the cruise, and they're ready to get the heck out of 2022. Or we'll see you in the fall of 2022.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, five unanswered goals, and the Predators fall 5-4.
I guess they weren't going nowhere too fast.
guess not. I said this morning on Robbie and Rex Road, you know, how do you feel about the matchup against Colorado as opposed to Calgary? And I don't know how you feel, how you guys feel, but I was like, look, does it really matter? Like, they were going to be heavy underdogs no matter what. I mean, Calgary was probably going to be a little bit more fun to watch because it was going to be a bloodbath. But, I mean, no one was going to pick them to win either series. So, to me, it's like, okay, well, Colorado it is, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, first of all, the Friday game was, I think, the most surreal game that I've ever seen, in that I don't think I've ever seen a team get ahead 4-0 that easily. And then just the circumstances and the way the goals started going in and the way the crowd got back into it, it was as if it was supposed to happen somehow. That's just the impression I get. You know, how do I know? I'm not saying I have some greater knowledge of anybody else, but it just seemed that way. It just, like, it, you watched it happen and you're like, this is not supposed to win or something. It was just an odd energy that was going on throughout the building. They did have a good crowd. It's the last game they ever played there. The Predators have drawn some very unique games on the road with the ceremonies. They had all of the former players there. They booed the owner on the way out, but it was almost full.
Wow.
Because they can't stand the owner there because they can't figure it out how to get the right people, the right places, the right team. But they were there to cheer. They had a huge amount of alumni like Shane Doan and stuff, and they had been doing it all week. They had already beaten Minnesota coming from behind. They beat Dallas coming from behind. And so they just played on out the string. So
Bissonnette was in attendance.
Oh, yeah, he was there.
Yep.
He was. Jeremy Roenick, they were all there. So anyway, you know, that's in the past now. So all you can do is take a look at what you have ahead of you. Number one, the travel is a lot better. Look, it would have been a heck of a series against the Flames. As you said, Darren, the physicality, the way that those two teams had matched up throughout the season, that would have been very intriguing. But the travel back and forth across the border would have been a lot, I guess, on both teams, but I think the advantage would be Calgary starting at home there. Against Colorado, I think the one advantage the Predators do have is they have a physical edge. They definitely, in the games between the two, the Hurd and, you know, Michael McCarron and guys like that, Borowiecki, I think they can certainly be a factor if they can play their cards right in this series. They have an edge there. But can it work in the playoffs, and can you do it without taking too many penalties? It's going to be the fine line that they're going to have to walk.
And that's going to be the thing. I don't know if I heard it this morning on Robbie and Rex Road, or I was listening to the radio this weekend, and they mentioned the physicality of the Nashville Predators and using that potentially against the Colorado Avalanche. And in a regular season, yes, you could take a little bit more chances. But in the playoffs, you can't put your team in a position like that. You know, you want to be – there's a fine line between being physical and putting your team in a position where you're man down. So they're going to have to figure that part out. And, you know, it all dictates on how the refs are calling it, just like any other sport. If they're allowing you to be physical, then it plays more into what you like to do. But if they're not, then you got to find a way to change your game up but still be aggressive. So I think that's going to be the sort of cat and mouse deal that Himes is going to have to figure out. How do we still be physical but not putting ourselves in a disadvantage? Because Colorado, you put them on the special teams, they're going to dominate you every time.
Yeah, and I think Colorado, I think the power plays are, and this is going to be another big stat. I think Nashville is going to have a great series on the power play. Colorado does not have a great penalty kill. They do have an elite power play. And so, look, that is going to be the theme every game, is how physical can Nashville be? How much are they going to call? How many power plays for each team? And what will that translate to? And then, of course, the other thing is, you know, can Nashville get good goaltending in this series? It's very uncertain whether UC Saros can play. I personally would be really surprised if he starts the series. And so David Rittich is going to have to, you know, seize this opportunity and be as great as he can be, if that's the case. I don't know if you're going to hear anything one way or the other in the next day or two on Saros' status. But, you know, the thing that happened also on Friday's game, Darren, is unfortunately for Connor Ingram, he did not jump up and take the opportunity. There were some really weird goals. I mean, very strange. The first one in particular, it bounced off about three guys. Two of them were Predators. It hit his skate after it hit the post. And I don't know what happened to him from there, but it just didn't seem like he was seeing it real well. I don't think the Predators really played that bad, even though it sounds awful that they gave up five. But there was some strange goals, and then some goals that, quite honestly, you know, he should have had, and he would have if he's on his game.
I thought the last goal in the second period late to cut it to 4-3 was a really soft goal, and I don't think
he recovered. No, there's no question. No question. I think he would tell you that. You know, and I've just felt bad for him because I think he's an excellent goaltender who has an NHL career ahead of him, and just in this one game where he gets a chance to showcase and get ready for the playoffs, you know, he didn't really make the most of it. But there were some odd circumstances around it, but, you know, you got to get the job done. So that was part of it. So you come out knowing that David Rittich is going to be the guy that gets the crack at it, and then we'll see how soon Saros is ready. But, you know, that's the other part. They're going to be an absolutely overwhelming underdog. They're underdogs, and then there's going to be the level of underdog the Predators are. You know, we were laughing in 2017 when nobody picked them. And I think at that point, we were a little bit surprised. We thought the gap was a little bit closer. This time, because of the circumstances, I don't think you will find a soul that even has them in the series. But that's fun. You got to use that to your advantage as the underdog.
Well, let's talk about it on the other side. We'll continue the discussion on this series that begins tomorrow night at 8:30 our time. So a puck drop at 8:30 tomorrow night. Game one, Predators and Avs. We'll continue the discussion next here on DDC ESPN 102.5 The Game. Pete and Hal on the call Friday night. They'll be on the call from Denver tomorrow night when the puck drops at 8:30 pregame. I'll have for you at 7:30 on these airwaves. Willie and his crew, yes, it'll be on Bally Sports Round 1. Their coverage will begin at 8 o'clock. Is right, 8 o'clock? Are you?
8 o'clock, yes. I do want to stress that. Every game. Yeah, and there is national coverage, as there is every year in the first round, but I just want to let everybody know every single game that is played in the first round, we will have it on Bally Sports. And so, as always, you know, we hope you will choose our coverage. So just throwing that out there.
I'm sure people will, because every time it's national, people go nuts. So I don't think you have to worry about that. You're good. You guys are good.
I hope so.
Preds fan base will tune in. They got you. Back here on Darren Donica Chase, presented by Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, a York certified comfort expert company. Schedule now at springhillac.com. By the way, you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. I said this morning, I'm a 9 o'clock hit on Robbie and Rex Road, if Colorado does lose this series, because everybody is going to pick them and what's been going on the last several years, it's going to cost their coach his job. I believe that. He'll get fired. Does anybody agree with that, or do you guys push back and disagree?
I don't know if it's that kind of market here. I don't know if, you know, Joe Sakic is the GM. So that's hard to say. I think he's an excellent coach. I think he's done an outstanding job. Nobody had heard of this guy, Jared Bednar, when he took over, and he has built a great team. But, you know, people get irrational if you get upset, you know, and this would be
a
major, major
upset. Has he built a great team, or Joe Sakic built a great team?
I think they've done it together. I really do. I think they work very well together. But they're, you know, they're a long way from that happening here. I think what Nashville's got to figure out a way to do is to throw a little doubt their way. You know, it's interesting. Their slogan here in Denver is find a way. And so it's kind of like the message is, look, you've got the best team. You haven't found a way, even though you've had the ability to. So get it done. So I don't know. I don't know how you interpret that. It is interesting. I still see a fan base that's kind of enthusiastic. I'm curious to see what happens if the Predators can, you know, take these games into the third period close, and it's not going according to the script. I think there's going to be a lot of belief that you're just going to roll over the Predators here, even though the Predators won 3 out of 4 in the regular season and just beat them the other day.
Yep, beat them Thursday night.
Now, if they lose this series or if they don't get to the Stanley Cup? Because you would think the sentiment would be, hey, listen, not necessarily this series. Yes, you must win this series because we feel as an organization we're a better team. But not only this series, but the next series and the series after that, ultimately the Stanley Cup. So can it just be you got to win this series and then you're good? Or, you know, like I said about Ryan Tannehill, it's not just winning a game because we've already done that. It's about getting to the Super Bowl, or it's about getting to the Stanley Cup and winning the Stanley Cup.
You can't be flirting with the President's Trophy every single regular season and keep going out in the first and second round.
Yeah, you're
and
right.
Expect to keep your job. Like that's just not how it works. And this team was basically they got off to a slow start, and then once they hit the turbo button, they've been the best team in hockey all the way until the end when Florida ended up taking it and getting their first ever President's Trophy. But they've been widely viewed as the best team in hockey most of the season. Mm-hmm. And if they go out in the first round, I'm just telling you, I think he's losing his job. Like, you just can't recover from that. I mean, you can't keep having the seasons and everybody praising you and praising you. You haven't even been to a conference final. Like, it's just how many seasons – do you get before they say, well, maybe we just need a change. Maybe we need to go different. The personnel is there. We're having success in the regular season. It's not translating to the postseason. Like, at what point, I mean, how long is the leash? I just, especially in this series, if UC Saros is not available, I mean, they weren't going to be picked. The Predators weren't going to be picked by hardly anyone with UC Saros. He's one of the best goaltenders in the league. Without him, literally no one's going to pick them. I mean, no one is going to pick them. And if you lose that series, I don't think he can recover from that. To your bigger picture, Derek, I don't know how far they have to go.
But they definitely got to win this.
But I'm just stepping out there and saying I will be shocked if he keeps his job if they lose this series. And by the way, it's hockey, and you never know.
Yeah,
well, that's the thing.
They could lose this series because it's hockey, and you never know.
Let's look at some of the matchups. Because I agree, I think you've hit it, Darren. If they lose this series, as big a favorite as they are, there's going to be a lot of noise. I don't know if it'll cost him his job because they've won a lot of games. But Derek's part of it. Do they have to win the cup? Think about the draw. Because of the draw, they have to play the winner. You would play the winner of Minnesota, St. Louis. Those are powerhouse teams. One of those teams is going out in the first round. Those teams had outstanding regular seasons. Minnesota is going for it this year, knowing that they're going to have to lose some guys next year because they get some serious salary cap penalties.
Minnesota would have won the Pacific.
Yes. Calgary's got major, major salary cap questions going into next year and the year after. You know, they've got to play Dallas. I think they match up well with Dallas there. But let's go over to the East. Tampa Bay's got to beat the two-time defending champions. I'm sorry, Tampa Bay is playing Toronto. Toronto, to avoid the disaster of losing in the first round again, has to beat the two-time defending Stanley Cup champions in the first round. I mean, there are some brutal matchups. There's going to be some really good teams that go out in round one. It happens every single year. And so, you know, that's always the thing. Can't get out of the first round, or you can't win the Stanley Cup. It is so hard in this league because the matchups are so tough.
Let's go to Scott in Franklin on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com.
Man, I'm glad to hear that Bally's is going to have all the first-round games. I guess the question is, are they going to show the starting lineups for both teams on all the first-round games?
Scott, yes. We will do what we can.
Well, I tell you, I am one person who is actually sort of glad we've got Colorado rather than Calgary. You know, we came close to sweeping both of them, and we also came close to sweeping Minnesota. I mean, I think Colorado, though, seemed reluctant, and it wasn't just the last game where they totally seemed off-put or off their game, but the whole every game we played them, reluctant or unable to match our physicality. And I think that will help gives us a chance in the playoffs. Calgary, on the other hand, seemed eager to, especially that last game. And, you know, especially, you know, Tkachuk seemed to have the ability to lure us into a bunch of dumb penalties. So, I mean, it's not like we're going to have a great chance without Soros against either, but given the situation, I think I'd rather have Colorado just because because of that reason. They don't they aren't physical, and they seemed a little bit intimidated by us last week.
And I think you have to be careful. I do think you have to be careful. Last week was last week. The playoffs are a different story. I think D-Mace just kind of said that in the last segment. I agree with that. But I think you're onto something, Scott. That is what Nashville is going to try to do. There's no doubt about it. And Colorado's lineup is not as equipped to stand up to the physicality. Now, in the playoffs, you don't tend to have as many fights, right? You're not going to drop the gloves. But you are going to try to be aggressive with checking. You are going to try to intimidate some. You are going to try to, you know, hold your turf in front of the net, the net front battles, things like that. That's where you need to do very well. Now, the question is, can you keep up with Colorado? It will not shock me if Colorado averages over 40 shots a game in this series, at least in the games in Denver. In the games out here, Colorado has completely dominated the opposition. You know, Nashville beat them in the shootout. I think they won, Darren, if you remember, tell me, but I think it's like 32-5-4, I think was their record at home. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they have blown away the opposition. You're going to see them full throttle. They're probably going to get Gabe Landeskog, their captain, back. So they're going to be a lot to handle. They have waves of talent and speed. And so that's going to be the thing is you can hit them, but you got to get to them to hit them, right? And you got to do it on time because if you're late, they'll call you for a penalty. And if it's like, Derek, when you're trying to guard your man in basketball or football, like, can I guard you without hand-checking you too much or grabbing you too much? Because if you're too quick, then I'm going to foul you, right? That's my only and that leads to a lot of trouble. So that's going to be
– Well, that can't be their you know, their focus going in. We just got to, you know – Our game plan is to be out physical them. Well, what if that don't happen? Then what do you switch to? Their game plan has to be go out there and play the best hockey that they can possibly play. Don't let just, okay, we're going to out physical them. That can't just be your game plan because, you know, like Mike Tyson said, you got a game plan to get until you get punched in the mouth, right? So what if Colorado comes back and they're physical with you? And they're starting to out-physical you a little bit more. Then what do you go to? I don't think that would happen, but it's the chess match back and forth. You can't let that be your sole game plan. I'm going to out-physical them and, you know, hope that it works. It has to be a game plan of we got to use our skill along with our physicality at points and times and allow that to sort of dictate how we move through the hockey game.
No doubt about
it. Got to be smart.
We'll see how it all plays out. Certainly tomorrow night, game one at 8:30. We'll come back. The draft is in the books. How did the Titans do? We've had some questions on our text line about the AFC South, about the Titans. We'll discuss all that next here on the DDC ESPN 102.5 The Game. Keep this in mind. This is what I know. At about 11:45, a chance to win a family four-pack of tickets to see the Sounds Sunday at home at First Horizon Park. So really good prize for This Is What I Know. That's coming up at about 11:45. Also, your chance today on our show to win tickets to game three of round one, Preds Avs playoff tickets. There you go. That'll be Saturday afternoon. Tickets today to win, or tickets for two to game three on Saturday afternoon at Bridgestone Arena. So back here on the DDC. So the draft is in the books. Had unnamed texter on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com say, good morning, guys. In your opinion, who won the draft in the AFC South? And who is going to win the AFC South now that the draft is in the books? Who wants to go first?
I mean, who won the AFC South in regards to draft? It's yet to be determined.
Okay,
and that's the way you got to look at it. I think every team checked a box in what they felt their team needed. Now, obviously, people are going to say, well, the Titans sort of regressed in a sense because they got rid of one of their star players. And you're absolutely right. But it doesn't put them to a point where, you know, oh, they are third in AFC South. No, I do believe that Indy has edged them at being first, and not complete because of what they did in the draft. I believe it's what the Titans did during the draft, meaning trading A.J. Brown away. And obviously they got a second and a third round pick, the second they didn't have, which they really needed. I'm pretty sure that was in discussion leading up to the draft. How do we get a second round pick? Because it's hard to go from 26 and then don't pick until the third, late in the third round. That's tough, you know, to sit and watch. And typically teams are not going to make deals on the second day because you have nothing to give them, you know? So all your deals need to be made on the first day. So I think Jacksonville, they did a good job at addressing their needs. They became a better team. I think Indy became a better team. The Titans became a better team. Houston, they became a better team via the draft. So it's yet to be determined on who wins. But I tell you what, because of the Titans trading away their best receiver, to me, Indy has an edge now. And again, it has nothing to do with what they did in the draft, like the guys that they drafted. It's all about what the Titans did.
Yeah, they lost their
internally. Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. So I give Indy the edge right now.
There's no way have gotten better since the draft, right? I mean, there's no way. Not today.
I mean, they addressed some needs, yes. So have they?
No, I'm saying to your point, there's no way on paper.
Oh, on paper,
today,
yes.
You could say before going to the draft, you could make a case for the Titans having an edge on better, or they're the top team in the AFC South, right? You know, the Colts right behind.
Mm-hmm.
But after you trade your number one receiver away, who's young, no one's going to say you got better, mm-hmm. right? I mean, I don't have a problem, as we talked about all day Friday, I don't have a problem with the move because I wouldn't have paid him $25 million a year. But that's not the question. The question is, you know, who got better? Who's the leader in the clubhouse and the AFC South? I don't know how you could sit here today. It still has to play out, and you see some of these rookies and some of the newcomers, how do they look in training camp and preseason? But today you couldn't possibly sit here and say, yeah, Titans traded away their – number one receiver, young receiver, and they're still the favorite in the South when it was already that close to begin with.
I think you're dead on. It's hard. We knew on Friday after they had made the trade for A.J. Brown that they were going to do the real difficult challenge of trading a great player or one of their most important players. It remains to be seen how great he's going to be from here on out. But there's no question he's been a critical player that moves the needle. You're trading him and still trying to win now. That's a tough needle to thread. They're trying to do it. They're going to need – I mean, I don't want to put more pressure on Treylon Burks than there already is, but the fact is that with them starting from scratch in their passing game targets, right now – I'm hard-pressed to tell you who's the number one guy. Well, is it Robert Woods? Well, I don't know. Is Robert Woods ready for the regular season? I don't know. We can't answer that now. We don't know if Treylon Burks is going to pick up everything and be ready to play week one as a number one target. You know, there's a lot to be sorted out there. So their entire passing game has question marks. And that happened almost overnight with what happened. And it doesn't mean they can't still be a really, really good team. I just don't know if they can maintain the level that they've been on after making this move, even if this draft is really good. And it's going to have to be for them to stay at that level.
I think the pressure is not on Treylon Burks because you can't ask him to come in and be the impact guy that AJ was.
But fans will, though.
I understand that. But,
I didn't say it was fair, but fans will.
But now, if you look at the numbers didn't wow you. So you figure, you know, if he can get a third of what AJ got as far as numbers, then they should be all right if they indeed spread the ball around. But I'm telling you, because okay,
you think he's gonna have? You want him just to have 30 catches?
Because
by the way, they're in trouble.
No. Here's the thing. Here's the thing. You can't. One, this kid is gonna have to learn the playbook. And again, what do you do not have that you used to have? Time. Okay, so they're only going to put him in packages that he's familiar with. You know how much that shrinks the book down? It shrinks it down a lot. I mean, tremendously. They're not going to put him in positions where he can't succeed. They're going to put him in positions where he can. And it would be unfair to them. It would be unfair to him if they ask him. If the Titans are asking him to be A.J. Brown or give them the production, they would love it, yes, and he would love it. But you can't go in and say, you need to give us the production that A.J. had. No, I want that, but I'm just learning everything, you know?
Why can't he look like Justin Jefferson out of the gates?
How many guys look like Justin Jefferson?
Well, I mean,
I'm just saying.
What is the average?
He wasn't Justin Jefferson in college. No way near Justin Jefferson in college.
Okay, but, I mean – why can't he look like Jamar Chase? Why can't
he
look
wasn't
like
Jamar
Justin
Chase
Jefferson?
In college? You're naming guys that were just flat out on another level. Jefferson and Chase, those guys were on another level. Jameson, those guys were on another level. Jameson Williams, those guys were on another level. He's not on their level. He's good, but he's not on their level coming out of college. So my thing is, you want that, but you can't expect him to give you that.
Justin Jefferson was picked after Treylon Burks.
It doesn't, but look at the college numbers. Did you?
Then why did
Jefferson,
21 teams pass on him if he was that?
Because there were a lot of other good receivers in that draft, too. There were a lot of them. Listen, do you realize the numbers that Jefferson and Chase and I forget the other cat name that they had? You're talking about two guys that had over 15 touchdowns.
Well, yeah, they were on a national championship team.
Exactly.
15-0,
they blew
it.
Numbers out of the – numbers you won't see from a trio for a very long time. I don't think you'll ever see those numbers again from a trio of receivers and quarterbacks. That was an anomaly. You're not going to get guys to do that. But Treylon Burks, what you ask him is to go out there and perfect the things that we give you. We're going to give you a package. Perfect those things. And if you do, then we'll give you a little bit more. He's going to start off slow at the beginning, because they're going to feed him slow. And as the season goes on, it'll pick up a little bit. But the pressure is on Kelly and Downey. What do they do now?
I got to be honest, Derek, and I don't think you meant it this way, I don't think, but I'm going to let you clarify on the other side. It sounds like you're laying the groundwork like, hey, Treylon Burks, this is going to be like Corey Davis. He's good, but he probably should have been drafted that high because the expectations shouldn't be that high. Is that what you're saying?
What are your expectations, Darren?
No, I'm going to answer that on the other side.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, I want to hear what Darren's expectations are. Okay. I want to hear Darren's expectations as well.
We'll do that to close out hour number one. Brad, we'll get to you on the phone line as well. We'll do that to close up shop. Hour number one, talking with TD, coming up at 11 o'clock here on DDC ESPN 102.5 The Game. Don't forget to join us. We've teamed up with the Music City Celebrity Golf Tournament, benefiting Folds of Honor. That'll be May 16th at Hermitage Golf Course. Put your team together and come play with athletes, musicians, and other local celebrities. You can sign up at thegamenashville.com/golf. Back here on the DDC. So, Derek, were you just setting us up for another Corey Davis draft pick? Is that what you were saying about Treylon Burks?
No, because Treylon Burks wasn't drafted, what, fifth overall? When you're drafted in that top five, that's something different from any other spot in the NFL draft. Top five players are supposed to come in and make an immediate impact, and I mean immediate. That means that, you know, we picked you. We were in the top five. We picked you. We knew we were going to pick you. We knew no one else was going to pick you. You were our guy from day one. So when you're drafted that high, the expectations are a little bit higher.
Yeah, when you traded up eight spots to get him in the first round, doesn't that mean they're really high on him?
They're really high on him, but they understand that, listen, we got to bring this young man in slow, okay? We don't need him. We would love for him to be A.J. Brown his first year. But if he's not, if he's progressing and we see it, then it's okay. Because why? We're a run-dominated team anyway. We're going to run the football anyway. And who's going to be the security blanket? Well, the tight end and the receiver that they just brought in, Woods. That'll be the security blanket. Burks is going to be the guy that they're going to feed him very slowly because they want him to be successful. If you tell him he needs to be A.J. Brown, you're setting him up for disaster. You are. Because the minute he's not, everybody's screaming. Everybody in the building, not the fans. They don't really care about the fans. They care about what they think inside that building. And if you try to expedite the curve, you're setting that kid up for disaster, man. I've seen it before. You let him come on the way he's going to come on. If it's A.J. numbers coming off the bat, then great. But if it's not, as long as you're seeing improvement from this young man, that's all you want to see, because the pressure's going to be put on the guys that are playing, meaning Derrick Henry, Ryan Tannehill, Robert Woods, Hooper the tight end. That's where the pressure's going to be. It's not going to be on this rookie. That's unfair. He's not Ja'Marr Chase. He's not Jefferson. He's not Matt. Those guys came in, and both of them had over 1,500 yards. Both. One had 111 catches, the other had 86. They were the top receivers in top three or four receivers in the draft. Treylon Burks wasn't a top three or four receiver in this draft. He just wasn't. No knock on him, but he got drafted in the first round because the Titans addressed the need because they traded away A.J. Brown. But to say he needs to be A.J., that's unfair. If he becomes A.J., great, but he doesn't need to be him. He needs to help the team win football games, however that is.
I think that's a good way of putting it. So what is your expectation, Darren? I'm holding you to this.
I want to hear yours.
Why won't you give yours?
Brad's been holding patiently, and I want to get to the phones, and then I'll answer it, okay? Can you just give me a minute?
You like to sneak out.
I'm not dodging the question. We got somebody that wants to talk to us, and they've been holding for a while, and I want to get them up.
Right. Yeah, this is
I get it.
You're dying to hear my answer. Okay, but let's get Brad in here first, okay? We got time. We can do both.
Fight.
Brad, welcome in.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. I love what they did. I think it's the right call. People forget, you know, we dropped $100 million with a wide receiver in exchange for a four-year rookie deal for, you know, what looks to be a really good quality player from Arkansas. You look at his film and stuff, he's a beast. And the SEC, by the way. Also, when you get Willis at 86, I mean, I saw some stuff. He might have gone fifth to the Giants. And I looked at the third round draft choice contract, like $3 to $4 million for 4 years. So you're getting a backup at the very least for $800,000 a year. So I think it's great. I think what they do is exactly right, and I think they got some quality players. And we're in great shape next year. If we get Willis on board, drop Tannehill, we just dropped $200 million worth of salaries from Tannehill and AJ Brown that we're on the hook for. So I just think it's a business. I think they've got great players. The game now is rookie players for 4 years, then they go get their bag, it seems to be, and wide receiver in particular. So you're going to have to keep churning rookies. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thank you, Brad. I mean, that's a lot of expectation. That's a lot that has to happen. I mean, you can be excited, and that's fine, but okay. I mean, you know, Malik Willis, I don't anticipate he will touch the field this year unless there's an injury and things go awry, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think he is going to be in the plans. This is a season where he probably holds a clipboard and learns, I would think. So I would go in with zero expectations. Now, it'll be kind of fun to see what he looks like in preseason, right? He'll get snaps in preseason. But to me, it's going back to the Treylon Burks. And, Willie, I'm going to answer. Here we go, okay? A.J. Brown, his first year, had 52 catches for 1,051 yards and 8 touchdowns.
20 yards a catch.
Yeah. Is it
20
too
yards
much?
A catch.
Obviously, that is humongous. Is it too much to ask for Treylon Burks to have 50 catches for 850 yards and 6 touchdowns? Is that too much? Because that's, if you're asking me, that's what I would expect out of a guy they traded up 8 spots in the first round at 18 to replace your number one receiver, although Robert Woods is the guy that is going to be the number one if healthy. But 50 catches for 850 yards and 6 touchdowns. I don't think that's too much to ask in a 17-game season. 17 games in a season, I don't think that's too much.
I think that is realistic. But I think, as Derek said, you got to remember what is the offense? The offense is going to now, I think more than ever, go back to the roots, and that is a running offense. It's going to be run the ball, play action, and you've got to sort out the roles. But I can see that. I mean, I don't know if I would say I would take that and never argue if those are the numbers. I think that'd be a really solid rookie season. The question then becomes, who else contributes? What do I get from Woods? Because I think that's a big unknown right now. How quick is he going to be ready? How quick, can he shoulder sort of the number one role and take some pressure off of Burks? Is there another guy they can bring in? They still didn't really address the deep threat part of this, right, which is what I was kind of hoping. Burks, I think, is that catch and run after the catch guy. I think they see him in the sort of same body type of A.J. Brown, can catch over the middle. He's a big, strong guy who can run, shake off tacklers, and then, not get caught. He's fast for his size. But, I'd love to see another guy emerge. Is there another veteran they can help support? I don't know.
So, Darren, you want him to average 17-plus per catch. That's what you're saying.
Is that what 50 into 850 yeah. is?
17 per catch. That's a lot now.
Yeah, I know.
That is a lot.
Yeah.
A.J. Brown averaged 20, and it went down dramatically the second year and the third year. So you're asking him to average 17 yards a catch. How many rookies averages 17 yards a catch and just blow it out of the water? Now, they may have 10 catches. To 17 yards or 5 catches to 17, 20 yards. Very, very seldom do you see a receiver, a rookie receiver, hell, any receiver, average that many yards.
Okay, well, what is realistic in your mind?
Realistically, this kid, 14 yards per catch, 13, 14 yards per catch. Because a lot of his catches are going to have to be tackle breakers. They're just going to have to be. He hasn't, now if he, listen, I'm only going by what I've seen. He hasn't shown an ability to get down the field, stretch the field. So what he has shown an ability of is catching underneath and breaking tackles. That's why they compare him so much to A.J. Brown, which is a great comparison in that regard. But A.J. was also able to go deep. A.J. was also able to run by people at times. I'm not saying Treylon Burks can't, but we haven't seen it. So in order for him to average
700 yards,
in order for him to average 17 yards a pop, he's going to have to run by a lot of people.
I said 850. You're saying about 750.
Yeah, about in between that 650, in between that 650 and 750.
Okay.
Now he can, the touchdowns vary because the touchdowns can be red zone touchdowns because of his big body, jet sweeps, all this other stuff. So he can have 650 yards, but 10 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. The touchdowns to me, I'm not going to say it's not a big deal in when I'm evaluating it, but touchdowns comes in different ways. It doesn't necessarily come from, you throwing a ball 5-10 yards down the field.
This is a tie real quick, and we can actually answer this. This is a really – I'm going to save it because this is a good question that we could spend some time on, but we'll do it. We'll talk with TD to begin the second hour of the DDC. We'll do that next.